Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, the second full week of December comes to a close this evening, broadcast-wise, for it is indeed the 16th day of December, 2016, and this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and be part of the real-time, madcap, multimedia, zany conversation that obtains during the 3 hours of the program each and every evening it is live, which is practically every Monday through Friday of any given year, you know, from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and if you do pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you will be promptly and happily and joyously for the season met by the likes of Anatole, Earther, Jug of Punch, Steve from Georgistan, V.T. Blom, and many others as we gather together for tonight's Friday on the Front Porch broadcast and the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that we have here each and every Friday. Nothing really like it out there in broadcast. Ordinary folks getting together and talking about what's on their mind. No limitations, no nothing. Just participation. And, you know, not, you know, no ego-driven determinations as to what passes for a suitable topic and what does not. No, sir. Not in the least. That ain't how it works. So, if you would like to jump into the chat room, you are more than welcome to. Oh, yes. Absolutely, you are. And I will say, because I do every evening about this time at the beginning of the broadcast, that this is, in fact, a listener-supported broadcast operation. And we closed with a bit of a deficit last night. But it's not as bad as it could be. No. We would have had a $340 deficit to fill this evening. But thanks to Chris and Tim and Reinhard, Laura and Glenn, it is only a $295 deficit this evening instead of $340. So that's what makes being a subscriber to The Horn so effective. When we end in a deficit, we don't have to have nearly as bad a deficit as what one might ordinarily expect. And tonight, well, I'm sorry, the premium offer for new subscribers is closed. It's over. And more's the pity. But Joan from Talibandiana had kindly offered to double the every new subscription up to the 15th of December. Well, we're past the halfway mark of December now. So that's off the table, but that doesn't mean we don't need new subscribers. Because eventually, remember, the goal is finding $410 a month subscribers. And you know what? We've got well in excess of those listeners. Fact of the matter is, we got a whole lot more listeners who don't contribute than those who do. And that's fact. But be that as it may, if you would like to become a regular subscriber, just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, and then click that little box there that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Put in whatever amount you want. George Soros, you can put in $10,000, okay? That'd be great. Then we'll have paid staff and a built studio and all kinds of groovy stuff. And new equipment even. But everybody else, you know, $10, $20, whatever. And it will be much appreciated, and it will go toward keeping independent progressive broadcasting on the air. And so, as we go into Friday on the front porch, we need to raise $295. Now, that creates a conundrum, because that means we've got a five in there, which means we need 29 and a half people to kick in $10, or 10 people to kick in $29.50. Or one person to kick in $295. Or, and this is where it gets hinky, two people to kick in $147.50. And beyond that, no, it makes my head hurt, so we're just not going to fool with it. But you get the idea. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, that's there for you too. Yes, indeed. If you'd like to use the U.S. Postal Service, you can mail checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, because I never see him, made payable to the Horn, to the Horn, see how it works, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do that, let me know. I'll give Boss Man Wayne a heads up. That means he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the big red truck when he goes in to check the mail, and all he'll have to take with him is a chainsaw in case he, you know, runs into the grand exalted Kleagle Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, who also pick up their mail at that same location. Yeah. So that's how that works. And hopefully we'll get the deficit out of the way and we'll be able to start the official Joyeux Weihnacht week without any deficits in our just ordinary fundraising goals. So thank you very kindly, one and all, for keeping independent progressive broadcasting on the air. Because when you get right down to it, pretty damn cheap. Not particularly expensive at all. What we try to raise. No. So, what do we got? Well, let's see. The first thing we've got, hang on just a minute. Stand by. Sorry, I had to change an Ethernet situation. What an annoyance. Come on, I know you can do it. Well, maybe, someday, possibly. But anyway, here in about 50 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. For the next 50 minutes or so, Sparky... there was some brief space folding going on. He is man cave in the chat room right now. But by the time it rolls around for him to moderate the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, which meets on every Friday, he will have folded space back to being simply Sparky. So there's that. Now, what in the living daylights is... All right, and that... Yeah, close the damn tabs. Just trying to figure out why one of the machines is being recalcitrant.
Yeah, we'll just restart the little bastard and find out what happens. But anyway, if you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and never have, I heartily welcome you to do that as well. And like I said, we'll fire it up in about 50 minutes or so. And if you've never participated and would like to, just fire up Skype and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc, which is one word, Sparky Dunc, and include a message in there about Friday on the Front Porch or something like that. And Sparky will provide you the breadcrumb trail with which to participate in the evening's festivities. If you absolutely cannot use that, then you can always use the stress line, which we keep reserved for people who can't use Skype. And that number, of course, is 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. Which, of course, spells horn, H-O-R-N. And we'll get that all going in, you know, like I said, about 50 minutes or so. What's on tap this evening? Well, let's see. I've been meaning to mention this, and now seems as good a time as any. You do realize that with the incoming Plugs administration, what's that again? Pustulant, lying. Dadgummit, Jen. Useless? Was it useless? Looking here real quick. Pustulant. Where'd it go? I'll get there in a minute. They're not even helping me in the chat room here. Ah, yes, pustulant, lying, unscrupulous, grotesque, sexual predator. That's Trump. Pustulant, lying, unscrupulous, grotesque, sexual predator. Oh, and by the way, I'm under orders from Jen to say a couple of things. Dadgummit, I don't think she's here. Maybe she and Graham are sleeping in on Saturday morning because it's already tomorrow over there. But I have to say, moose and squirrel. Because, of course, Barack Obama had a press conference this afternoon before he heads off for Christmas vacation. And I have to say, and of course, he did not say moose and squirrel. But I will say moose and squirrel. But there's another request out there that I kind of missed last night. Art from the Congo, who listens to, who listens along with Graham and Jen, Art would very much like, with a Scottish accent, for me to say, "Krusty smear," because that also applies to the incoming president of the United States. "The crusty smear he is." How's that? I'm not proud of my Scottish accent. It's just that's not that. But no, I think crusty smear. It works pretty good. So, dadgummit, I hope you catch it on the replay, Art and Jen and Graham. It's Krusty Smear Friday! Och! Enough already. But I tried. No, I've been meaning to bring this up for a while. we do realize that the incoming administration marks the triumph of right-wing broadcasting, do we not? Because it is. And it was further proven with another appointment of another denizen of the swamp that isn't getting drained. Schmucks, drain the swamp. Well, what kind of silly sods are they? Those economic anxiety filled Simon Simple and Simon Pure white people who got hoodooed into voting for the orange menace. Putin's little chew toy. The crusty smear. Mm-hmm. It is. It's the ascendance and triumph of right-wing broadcasting. First of all, start out with the Vice President of the United States. You realize, I trust, that Mike Pence would still be some Bible-banging lawyer in some pathetic little burg in Talibandiana were it not for right-wing hate radio. It's true. Before he was ever a member of Congress, Mike Pencil Neck Geek was a right-wing blatherhead. And he blathered right-wing things into a microphone for a while, and then he used that to catapult himself into the House of Representatives. And he then turned around and used that to use his status there to fret and worry and hold press conferences out in front of the building off to one side over there on the House office side, because I saw it happen a few times, to hold press conferences about the precious little fetuses. And then consequently, he became a darling of right-wingery. And the rest, as they say, is history. But there would have been none of that had he not started out as a sort of who's your ma, who's your pa flush phlegm ball without, we presume, the delightful handfuls of OxyContin. Yeah. And then, beyond that, well, there's the special advisor to the incoming president, which is, of course, racist Bannon. Racist Bannon, stop doing that to Bandit. Yeah. That. And then this. Because this is a real laugh a minute moment. For immediate release. They've got their own seal. It says President-elect Donald J. Trump. And I heard President Not Sure use that term today, the president-elect. I don't think you can technically, just from an art of word-knowing standpoint, I don't think you can apply that term to the pustulant, lying plugs. Unscrupulous, yet grotesque sexual predator. I don't think you can apply that to him because he's not the president-elect. Because he didn't get the popular vote. The idea of being president-elect is that people have actually elected you president. But they didn't. He didn't win the popular vote. There's no way he can be found to have won the popular vote. And he will only be president by operation, constitutionally, mind you, of the Electoral College. And you can't say that he's the president-elect of the Electoral College because the Electoral College doesn't meet until the 19th. On the 19th of December, he will be the president-elect after the Electoral College has met and utterly failed in its constitutional duties. Okay, I think we're going to have a little dispute via the art of knowing words with Brother Deacon Asa. The swamp, he says, did in fact get drained, Bob, at least enough to reveal the slithering mutants at the bottom so Trump could appoint them to all the cabinet posts. And here's another one of those aforementioned slithering mutants. My goodness gracious, we are coming up with some lovely terms, aren't we? Nothing says joyous holiday season quite like contemplating slithering mutants. At least as far as I'm concerned. Like I said, they've got a seal. President-elect Donald J. Trump. And the White House that's shown in the middle of it is in the middle. It's a blue band around a red field, and they haven't splattered the word Trump across the White House yet. For immediate release, December 15th, 2016. This was yesterday. The media contact on this is media@ptt.gov. Dateline New York, New York. Has the city of New York ever done anything quite so shameful as being the home of Donald Trump? I don't know. But it seems difficult to fathom to me. President-elect Donald J. Trump today announced his selection of Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg as Chief of Staff and Executive Secretary of the National Security Council. Okay, big deal. Here's the good part. This is the hockey puck part. You know, get a good bite of it. And Dr. Monica Crowley as Senior Director of Strategic Communications for the National Security Council. Senior Director of Strategic Communications. Then there's a quote. Deputy National Security Advisor Designate K.T. McFarland said, General Kellogg and Dr. Crowley, remember, Dr. Crowley couldn't put a Band-Aid on you without running the risk of killing you, are two outstanding individuals. We don't know why. They're outstanding in their fields. We don't know why, but they're just there. They're out there, standing in their fields. We're praying for rain, or possibly sleet and snow and a little bit of lightning. General Kellogg and Dr. Crowley are two outstanding individuals whose decades of combined experience and unique skill sets will be invaluable to advance the Trump administration's agenda to protect our great nation and advance U.S. interests throughout the world. I am so pleased that they will be joining our growing team at the National Security Council. God damn, it sounds like they just signed on Walmart. Dr. Crowley, a renowned scholar, well, maybe to Dr. Crowley, who holds a Ph.D. in international relations from Columbia University, to the undying shame of that institution. Must be pretty easy to get a Ph.D. from Columbia University these days. Is a foreign affairs and political analyst, wait for it, for the Fox News Channel. She's also a New York Times bestselling author and a columnist and online opinion editor of the Washington Times, which was once known as the Mooney Times, being as how it was owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Previously, Dr. Crowley served as foreign policy assistant and communications director to, no, bite down again, seriously, you're liable to hurt your tongue, former President Richard Nixon from 1990 until he went to hell, I mean, until his death in 1994. She was named Woman of the Year by the Clare Booth Luce Institute. You know, the Luce Institute. For people of loose morals. At the Conservative Political Action Conference in 2010 and received the Excellence in Journalism Award from the Women's National Republican Club, which wouldn't know excellent journalism if it stepped up and introduced itself, doffed its hat, and bowed in 2014.
I am deeply honored, humbled, and grateful to be asked by the President-elect to join the extraordinary national security team he is assembling,
said Crowley,
with vision, courage, and moral clarity.
Did she actually say that out loud, or did she just type it?
He is committed fully to reestablishing America's singular place in the world.
It will be singular, all right.
He's also committed to selecting the best people for the jobs of keeping the American people safe and the country secure. It'll be a great privilege to serve with them.
Yeah, I wish I was joking about that. I wonder if Roger Ailes told him to hire Monica Crowley.
Nah, it's a god, Donnie. She wears great panties. I've seen her on the trampoline. I mean, I tried to get her not to. I don't mean not get on the trampoline. I mean not wear panties. But, you know, when you're a doctor from Columbia University, you get all hung up on tiny, thin, wispy, lacy, little translucent panties. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I wish this was a damn joke. But it isn't. Not by a long shot. No. No, not even a little bit. It's all too terrifyingly real. And among other, and like her boss to be, Monica Crowley was a great one for the tweet at one point in time. She had a picture taken once upon a time. She went to Germany once upon a time, having been the 5th day of October, 2015. She went to Germany. She went to Berlin. And she had a picture of herself taken in front of a big old concrete wall. And when she tweeted out the photo of her standing in front of the big old concrete wall, she said,
"At the Berlin Wall last week, walls work."
Oh, really? Walls work. Yeah, that Berlin Wall sure did work. You know, there's still an open question among German scholars of the era of the Berlin Wall, just how many people were killed trying to get over it, around it, beyond it, but who did the wall work for? Why, it worked for the East Germans, who were in turn the puppets of Russia.
Walls work.
yeah, they do, Monica. Walls are just great. So there you have it, again, another dead-ender from the right-wing broadcast media complex, getting a nice taxpayer-funded job inside the administration of Benito Chito. That's so inspiring. At least it is to me. I don't know about you. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, subject line, it appears we're being set up to be lied to for the next 4 years. None of these Yahoos and Yahooettes could find the truth if it bit them in the ass, and they were, and I will add, if and they were looking for the bite mark with both hands. No, they couldn't. Charming, ain't it? Steve in New York wants to know, and did this PhD in international relations realize that the East Germans built the wall to keep people in?
Well, probably not. Because, I mean, it just looked like a wall that worked real great.
I mean, it worked so well that the great communicator, Ronnie Reagan, showed up there one day and said, "Hey, Mr. Gorbachev, ketchup is a vegetable. Or tear down this wall, or mommy," something like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, Stockton Larry clearing things up in the chat room. Bob, the Berlin Wall kept the West Germans out of the workers' paradise.
Yeah, I know.
A little bit of mail to share, this coming in from Todd. Subject line, this is the last thing I will say. If your idea of a resistant anti-corroboration, and it may be, I don't think I've ever talked about a resistant anti-corroboration, is the replication and amplification of the likes of Keith Olbermann, who is making not only a horse's ass of himself, but most importantly, any true and creditable political progressive, this is the antithesis of the first doctrine of Sun Tzu. We are choosing to lose the war before it's fought. I don't think that's the antithesis to the first law of Sun Tzu, but we'll take that as read. Jesus effing Christ, says Todd, this Russian hacking hypothesis will be a turd bomb that backfires on us. I don't think it can backfire because I heard President Notcher's press conference this afternoon, and he didn't say anything to make anything backfire. In fact, he didn't say much at all. Even with his very last chance after 8 years, no more elections to face, he still resisted the opportunity to be an angry black man and bring on Key and Peele's anger translator for him. Because it would have been kind of nice. It would have been kind of refreshing. But he has to remain calm and staid and Vulcan. I mean, just once, if we could have heard just a little bit of Klingon out of Ptah! But no, he did his thing, and he stayed in character, and he talked in measured tones about how the administration didn't bang on the Russian hacking because the administration didn't want to be perceived as trying to influence the outcome of the election. Yeah, it was pitiable, really. It was pathetic. I don't see how anything's going to blow up, turds or otherwise, or backfire on us. But Todd continues and says, I don't shoot pool with girls that have their own cue sticks, nor do I bowl with dudes with their own bowling balls and expect to win. We can add one to the, a couple more to this. Never eat at a place called Mom's, and never play cards with a guy named Doc. But I have made a fairly well life betting against the dominant narrative of the influencers of the public and markets hive mentality. The marks, the suckers at the table are in the room. For they are academia. They try to teach birds how to fly. And journalists, they try to explain how birds are known to fly because the latter class taught them. Mediated and have served it up like a slow-hanging curveballs. When I tell you that this reaction of blaming outside actors in this devastating lose is not only unhealthy, but counterproductive on any real political changes we want to make. I'm not so sure I get the thrust of that. Is it blaming when we talk about the fact that it happened? I mean, there's a difference, but look, because I'm a little sports nerd, not as bad as I once was. But still somewhat. Love to get down to Orlando to watch the Mountaineers play the Miami, the football team from the University of Miami. That ain't going to happen. But nonetheless, and you can hear it in any given season. Somebody will lose a game on a bum call. It happens in basketball, too. And they'll say, God damn it, we lost the game because of that one call. Well, no, not really. If he'd played harder, played better, played smarter, you wouldn't have had to worry about that one call. Right? I mean, this is, for instance, compare this with the West Virginia University loss to Oklahoma University, in which we just fumbled the ball all over the football field because it doesn't have handles on it, or Velcro. You know, you can point at five or six turnovers and go, you know, you leave the ball laying on the ground six times and you don't pick it back up and the other team does instead. You really can't expect to win. Now, that's a different kind of excuse making. But blaming the refs is generally accepted to be a cheesy way to go about things. On the other hand, if you insist on going forward and pretending that things that happened didn't happen, that's another kettle of fish altogether. And a right stinky and rotten kettle it is in the bargain. No. So I don't think it is blaming her loss. I mean, there's lots to blame her loss on. Being a terrible candidate, for starts. Having a campaign manager like Robbie Mook. Or having a sleaze merchant like David Brock working for her. Remember, he started out as a right-wing sleaze merchant and then realized there was a real market for sleaze merchants on the other side, and he switched sides. There's lots of reasons that Hillary Clinton lost, not the least of which has to do with the fact that this country was hell-bent on beating her in an election in a presidential election when and if she finally got to run in one. What happened in 2016 had been planned since 1992. And if she had given everybody in this country a new car, it wouldn't have mattered. The vast right-wing media complex would have been on the air complaining about, well, you know, it's not a very good car. And then over on the goofball left, it went, oh, Jesus, Hillary, goddammit, she probably got the cars from Buck and Goldman Sachs. Oh, Buck, oh, no, Hillary, Jesus Christ. And the outcome would have been the same. Todd continues and said, Jill, where is Stein or Stein or Steen or whatever, raised $7 million for a bullshit recount effort. Hell, it probably exposed the Democratic overvote in urban areas. What if those resources were used to influence Senate Democrats to block all Trump appointees? But we've not recovered yet, I guess, Todd says. Hey, I have a lot of loved ones, both family and friends, recovering from various addictions. Sometimes I question the very religious indoctrinate modalities that brought them back from life and now to a life in which and of itself is a form of recovery. I love to joke. They had it better in the former rather than the latter, but that's another philosophical debate. We as progressives are in that still fragile state with the incumbency of throwing shit as the flying monkey money right, instead of seeking and engaging in self-referential ontological conversation. But if that's what we need, so be it. Hillary did win overwhelmingly in Maryland, California, and New York, and anyone with a D after their name, where I have residences, but not in the less affluent rural areas of those same states. But that ain't collective America. So this nonsense about HRC winning the popular vote, that's a moot point to the rest of the country, unless we mutually agree to secede or invoke Article 5 without state boundaries, say, pre-Articles of Confederation. Well, I disagree there. It is not a moot point that she got nearly 3 million more votes than the pustulant, lying plugs did. That's not moot. That's real. It has something to do with his legitimacy. Because when you say that it doesn't matter that it doesn't matter that Hillary won overwhelmingly in some places but not others, well, Jesus, that's like saying that West Virginia, the single Trumpiest place in America, doesn't matter because, you know, I got and the other decent human beings got wildly outvoted. Of course it matters. And here's another thing. This is another reason that the vote count matters. Let's say it's true that the vast majority of Hillary's larger number of votes than the guy who won got. But let's say that they all came from California. Just California, all by itself, nothing but California. Let's say that. Not Oregon, not Washington, not Minnesota, not Maryland, not New York, not Massachusetts. Nope, just California. That's where those extra 3 million or so votes came from. Are we saying that somehow California is less American or less representative of American values? Are we really going to concede that ground to the goddamn Trumpanzees with their hands full of poo, looking for somebody beyond the cage bars to fling it at? To wit, us? I don't think so. Because I think there's an argument to be made that America, the America that all those precious twee white people are so economically filled with anxiety about, yeah, that America still exists, and it exists in places like California, where they have a functioning government, and where people still believe that that there's value in the American system. And their politicians aren't singularly fixated upon, taking care of the precious little fetuses. It ain't moot or mute. It's real. You don't get just a hell of a lot whiter than the western side of Oregon. And they voted decidedly differently from the white folks in, say, Ohio. Maybe we would do well to try to figure out why that is. Maybe it's because they think they've got something worth saving and they don't want it taken away from them. Whereas the economically anxious people in Ohio who, you know, draw swastikas in the snow and paint them on churches. And no, that was Indiana, wasn't it? I don't remember. But anyway, maybe there's a difference. You remember when we talked a long time ago about the fact that it's kind of upsetting when the liberal types talk about people, you know, rednecks who vote against their own economic interests. They vote against their own best interests, Moffey. And we talked about the fact that maybe their own interests aren't what the people who talk with the while clutching pearls and clenching teeth think they are.
I mean, clearly, the state of West Virginia, where I live, is a hell of a lot more worried about the little fetuses than they are about where their next goddamn meal's coming from, or if they can ever feed that that fetus if it becomes an actual baby. Maybe. Dunno. Todd says, bringing up superfluous and expansionist impeachment fantasies under Article 2, Section 4 will just castrate our cause even more. Well, you know, that's what, what's-her-name, Graham and Ben Bradley said back in 1986, and thereabouts, when the great communicator was busy pissing all over the Constitution. Oh, my stars and garters, we cannot possibly countenance another constitutional crisis so close on the heels of the last constitutional crisis that other Republican president occasioned here. The American people cannot possibly stand it. When in point of fact, that's exactly what the Constitution is designed for. Now, on the other hand, I do agree that there ain't going to be no impeachment because this Congress has no intention of doing its duty. Its ox will not be getting gored by the various and impeachable things that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini does. Shit! You think Paul Ryan gives a damn about the ethical... you think he cares if Udi and Cootie... Uday and Kusei Trump sit in on meetings? Hell no! You think Paul Ryan or Louis Gohmert or any of those other goobs, you think they care whether or not there's a giant conflict of interest that's actually spelled out in writing regarding the Trump International Hotel lease of the old post office building there on Pennsylvania Avenue? Hell no! Todd says, so what if they impeached Bill Clinton? It was his own AG, Janet Reno, that authorized the expansion of the Starr Commission to explore the Lewinsky nexus to perjury and objection of justice. Unlike Loretta Lynch covering up for Hillary, would, as AG Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, recommend an independent prosecutor to investigate Trump's multitudinous nefarious business affairs? Hard to say. But I seem to recall... it was a judge by the name of David Sentell, was it not, on the D.C. Circuit Court, who, in fact, expanded the reach of Ken Starr's investigation? And Todd says, but that is your vision of the horn? Arthur says, Bob, stop with the funny snooty voice. I almost dropped a monocle. All depends on which syllable you put the emphasis. Heavens to Betsy. So all of that going before is apparently my vision of the horn. No, my vision of the horn is a place where we come together and have conversation about what it's like living in this nightmare world. This increasingly uncertain waking nightmare of Trumpism. And we try to figure out a way how to resist. I mean, even my loopy resignation idea it's not impossible. It could have happened. And it would have been a merry chase to see Paul Ryan or Trump have to start nomination processes with this present Congress in place. Because if everybody went home, well, wouldn't that be lovely? Do you and Malloy only want to regurgitate from our fake news as a counterbalance to their fake news of the other side? Sure, it's entertaining, but what normative actionality utility does it serve?
Well, one, I cannot, will not, and never will speak for my dear friend Mike Malloy. He's been at this a hell of a lot longer than I have, and is plenty much capable of doing it for himself. So you'll have to direct that inquiry to him. And I suspect it will be a rather interesting answer. Unfortunately, our media messaging must compress very complex and dynamic thoughts and ideas into a black box meta-memes bounded by the economies of space and time rather than the long, long, long-form pedagogical format of that Bill O'Brien's show. I think you mean, no. This is a three-hour program, five nights a week. Dr. Bill goes for 2 hours a day, 3 days a week. So I don't think, no, I think you're thinking of something else, Todd. It's now time, he says, to confront the real baskets of deplorables, not half of the population, and work on Congress to at least out and challenged all of Trump's appointments during the confirmation hearing. Well, I think we've been trying to talk about that, haven't we? And we kind of realize that's an uphill climb, don't we? Because it is. I mean, I think Joe Manchin should leave as soon as possible the Democratic Party and join the Republican caucus in the Senate, but the Republican caucus doesn't want him there. They want him right there in the Democratic Party where he can do as much damage as humanly possible. I saw an article a few days ago in the Wall Street Journal talking about what the Republicans could and could not afford to lose in regard to any given nominee. And they said, well, you know, you only got two votes to give. And it immediately occurred to me, no. Because you're assuming all the Democrats will vote as a block. But we have a Quisling in the Democrat camp who will gladly vote with the Republicans and completely, utterly, and totally neuter any attempt to stop any of these monsters from taking office. Oh, and by the way, if we do stop a nominee, that means we get a different monster. It's not like Trump's going to turn around and go, oh, well, you caught me. Oh, you caught me. Oh, darn it. Okay, I'll have to give you a decent nominee now. Shit. Todd says, sorry to sound like the dude in the stands throwing popcorn on the field. I've never heard popcorn land. It's your show and you ball game. I just don't want us in the horn community waking up from this binge of denial with a mind-numbing hangover in 2018 midterm season, not fully abreast with no clue or plan of attack. One, no one's asleep here. We are sadly all too cognizant of just how nasty and ugly this is. Nobody's in denial. I mean, this place, here, I don't know about anywhere else, but here, we speak reality. Nothing's going to happen in the Electoral College. There's not going to be any goddamn Greek drama Deus Ex Machina swinging on a crane out onto the stage at the very last minute to prevent a disaster from befalling us. We are in the disaster. It's here. Okay? If anybody thought that, I don't know, is there anybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation who's in denial about this? Because if you are, let me disabuse you real quick. Don't try to be in denial about this. But I don't think you are. The question is, how do we survive this? How do we resist? And how do we refuse to collaborate? No collaboration. How do you not participate in it? How do you not give it any legitimacy whatsoever? How do you never concede a single point to any Trumpansy? And as far as 2018 is concerned, Todd, nothing's going to happen in 2018 either.
We're not going to get the House in 2018. And we are sure as shit not going to get the Senate. There are 25 Democratic Senate seats up in 2018. There are only 9 Republicans. Now that doesn't sound like a gambler's math to me. And how are you going to turn the House? Are you suddenly going to miraculously get a Democrat in Orange County, California? Or in the 3rd Congressional District of Alabama? Or the 6th District of Georgia? Or the 2nd District of Mississippi? Who are you going to turn? Hint, you're not.
So let's make sure that we are, as Todd says, fully abreast of what we face in 2018. We face another ass-whipping. We face the consolidation of Trumpensy power. Because, among other things, I expect that by the time 2018 rolls around, the goofball left will still be out there going, "Oh, Jesus Christ, fucking Hillary, oh, goddamn, she knew somebody from Goldman Sachs, oh, God!" And we won't be able to get anything accomplished. And, you know, people will wander off in the weeds to play with the little green meanies. Organize by all means. Prove me wrong. Golly, I want to be wrong. Every bit as badly as I wanted to be wrong when I predicted that Hillary Clinton would lose the goddamn presidential election. Prove me wrong. Yeah, hell, maybe the horn won't even be here by 2018. Jay Cruzen says, "I've heard that 30 electors have refused to vote for Trump. Not that it will change anything, because it won't. It won't change anything. So... and even if 39 refuse to vote for Trump, doesn't change anything. Throws it into the House. Guess what they do in the House? They make Trump president. Ha! Charming, ain't it? But there's some schadenfreude along the way. So far, as Michael and Madison pointed out, the only band that they've been able to find that's willing to march in... march in Trump's inaugural parade, insist on doing so with pillowcases over their heads while they carry burning crosses. Maybe the Major Etzel, you know, twirl burning crosses or something. And to the best of my knowledge, this is the headline act for the inaugural itself.
Are you serious? Apologies for freedom. I can't handle this. When freedom brings, answer the call. On your feet, stand up tall. Freedom's on our shoulders. USA! Enemies of freedom. Face the music. Come on, boys, take them down. President Donald Trump knows how to make America great. Deal from strength or get crushed every time.
That's right, that's right.
Over here, USA! Over there, USA! Freedom and liberty everywhere.
The headline act for the January inaugural of Donald J. Trump, billionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht and an airplane and a golf course. The Little Skeevy Girls. the Little Skeevy Freedom Girls. Because they can't find anybody that wants to do it. No, really. People who book those kind of acts, word has gone out from the Trump campaign, which, well, so they stopped them. No, we didn't. Yeah, you did. That they're actually offering ambassadorships. If somebody will just book a big-time headlining act who will gladly be go through the rest of their career being known as a Trump collaborator. I mean, I guess Scott Baio could sing or something. I mean, Ted Nugent can always play Cat Scratch, play Cat Scratch Fever and pretend it's the national anthem, and maybe offer to stick a firearm barrel in Hillary Clinton's mouth and pull the trigger like he's done on a number of occasions. Apparently, they are at least in negotiations with Garth Brooks. Where's that asshole from? Not Big Kenny, but the rich guy from Big and Rich. They were big a few years back. He's a right wing jackass. Maybe they can get him. They tried to lie and say, oh no, we're going to get Elton John, and Elton John said, like fuck you are. Yeah, Sir Elton wasn't having any of that. Yeah. David in South Carolina, Stan, says, no way in hell to get the GOP to change their playbook. It worked. Oh, hey, that's a thought. Jennifer's online now. John Ashcroft can sing. And the eagle is sore. Mm-hmm. Now that you're here, that I can say moose and squirrel for you, Jennifer. There, I want you to have your Saturday morning smile. Moose and squirrel, and I can is Art there? Krusty Smear. Because I said that earlier, but I don't think you heard it. Oh, okay. No. Michael and Madison pointing out that Garth Brooks has said no. He thinks. Posted about it the other day. And I guess Garth didn't want to be labeled a collaborator. Not good for the career, being labeled a collaborator. Well, see, maybe that... Angry reminds me. Sir Elton took money from his friend Rush Limbaugh to perform at his wedding. And Elton's reputation has still not recovered from that. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to play the Orange inaugural. Oh, I forgot about Lee Greenwood. Yeah, David in South Carolina, Stan, reminding me that they've got Lee Greenwood on hand to sing the one song that ever actually earned him a nickel. Meanwhile, from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, I'm a bit confused, Bob. America's a corporation. From the beginning, the biggest land grab in history. Trump and all the rest is just the realization of the corporation. Everything's already bought and paid for. Science fiction made real, for Christ's sake. First rule of business, if you don't own a part of it, you work for it. I've heard it a few times anyway. Trump is good for America. He's a businessman. That's what we do, right? The business of America is business, Calvin Coolidge. Maybe some folks just feel like they've walked into a full-blown nightmare. Anyway, best I've heard lately, kleptocracy. Oh, I think we're going to have one of those. Oh, good. Note coming from Jen. Aye, Admiral, there be art here. Good. So hopefully everybody's enjoying. No. How can you possibly enjoy a crusty smear, aye? God, it gives me the creeps just saying that. Okay, so Andy responding to Todd, translating Todd, actually. Todd is saying the Democrats aren't fessing up that their neoliberal policies lost the election, a 30-year run of leaving the working class behind. Blame the Russians and the heads in the Democratic leadership won't roll. The Russians provide a convenient scapegoat. Brent Budowski's strategy unveiled in a Podesta email. The corporate neoliberal leadership in the Democratic Party needs to go, just like the UK's Tory Prime Minister David Cameron and Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi. I'm with NSA whistleblower Bill Binney. Where's the substantial proof? If it were a Russian hack, the NSA would have brought the evidence forward. Also, Craig Murray, ex-UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, says he knows who the DNC email whistleblower is that delivered the goods to WikiLeaks. Good Guardian piece. There was no hack of the Podesta emails. CraigMurray.org. Cali's Democratic politicians sucked the big one, too. P.S. Most are neoliberal corporate one percenters. There's no paradise here unless you're a corporate CEO. But California does seem to work a hell of a lot better than Ohio right now. Or, say, Talibandiana. Or Talibama. Or Tennistan. Or Arkansas. Or Michigan. Pennsylvania. Wisconsin. I mean, just saying. So, okay. So the only reason Hillary lost was neoliberal policies among voters who can barely pronounce or spell neoliberal policies. Half of the Trump vote wasn't racists and Klansmen and neo-Nazis and misogynists and fetus fetishists. And I don't understand. Because they really were. And now we have to deal with the fact that they are in the ascendant. Which should be a real laugh riot. Yeah, I was thinking about that. David in South Carolina stances sent me the clip of Robin Williams with Scottish accent, and that no, that's precious. I laugh to the point of peeing just about every time I see that. The Angry Indian points out, before I could even get to it, anyone who understands even the most basic tenets of intelligence espionage understands why the authorities are not releasing this data. They cannot trust their own conservative politicians, period. I mean, Jesus Christ, the scientists in the United States, like over at the Department of Energy, are desperately trying to scrounge up mirror sites where they can put precious scientific data before the Trumpansies can come in with their meat cleavers and destroy decades of work on the climate. But somehow the intelligence structure of the United States is supposed to just pick up the phone at one ringy-dingy and call Glenn Greenwald and get his permission and tell him. I don't see that. Publishers don't publish in a vacuum. I may not like some of what gets published, but it does at least run past an editor. Sometimes that process succeeds and sometimes it fails. It failed spectacularly back in 2002 when the New York Times under, what was his name, Howell Raines, decided that it would simply be a stenography operation for the office of Count Dicula. It can fail. It does fail. But Jesus Christ, given the hiding that outfits like the Washington Post so often gave to Hillary, it's kind of hard to see him turning around all of a sudden, getting all warm and fuzzy about her. But you know, we can wait and see. I don't think we've got any other choices. And today was not exactly an inspiring moment of leadership coming from President Not Sure. If ever he has earned that label, today it was. But he also, along the way, said, you know, listen, do you think the Russians tell everybody everything that they're doing too? The whole purpose of moving in covert spaces is to not let everybody know what you're doing. That. Yep. So here we go. It is time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And I hope you'll jump in too. We need all the we invite all the participation of those who wish to participate, because it's a darn fine time. Again, if you've never done it before, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc, and you will be shown the breadcrumb trail and invited into what really is a rather extraordinary space. And you're welcome to be part of it. So, we'll take a little break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. We have $295 to raise this evening, and we are still, curiously, at $295 to keep from being in a $495 hole come More In Monday. If we could take a bite out of that, that would be great. But I understand it's the Christmas season. It's hard for folks, and people have obligations that are attendant upon them at this time of year. Oh, I sure do get that. But if you can, it is your support that keeps all of this going. This is listener-supported conversation radio on Friday on the Front Porch for the 16th of December, 2016. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be back. I think that was either Jesus Just Left Dublin or Waiting for the Bus. No, that was the Bells of Dublin. Christmas by the Chieftains. Sorry, that was just cheap, but sorry. It's Friday on the front porch, and it is time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And let's go immediately over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Music from the home countries, huh?
Guy from the old sod. Krusty smear. That's,
you
just
know, I'm half Irish and half Scottish, so
yeah, that's pretty much where I am. Well, a whole lot of there's a mishmash. I think there's a German in there too. Got some Indian in me, just can't prove it.
Oh, my grandmother was born in England.
Yeah, I know there's some. I got some English. I got some Scottish. I got some German. There's bound to be some Irish wandering around in there somewhere.
Well, I know I got Irish because of my namesake. His last name was Kennedy.
There are Kennedys in Scotland, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Clan Kennedy.
I think he was Irish. Because on my father's side, my father's great-great relative came over from Glasgow, I think it was, in 1831.
That would make sense. That's post the clear the post the Highland clearances, the, you know, the ethnic cleansing by the British of the Scottish Highlands. And of course, a lot of Scots left Scotland and went to Northern Ireland. There's an old saying there that the Scottish fell on their knees and prayed. The Scottish got to Ireland and fell on their knees and prayed to God and fell on the locals and prayed on them. I don't know where they get these hard ass reputations, but they do. Makes for interesting consideration, though.
But other than that, it's a nice day here. It rained quite yet last night sometime.
Well, I've got a toasty 66 degrees here in the studio. Last night was brutal. We got down to 7. Not a hell of a lot you can do about that. Even an electric blanket doesn't help when you crawl out from under them, and anything that's exposed freezes off, or feels like it will. So you were man caving for an hour, though. Have you folded space
now?
I had to catch
up on some chores out there.
Ah, chores.
Normal chores I do. I was running wood around and cutting up some cardboard boxes.
How many hours of winter do you have left now? Since winter hasn't even started.
Till sometime in January, I would say. Maybe the first part of February. We'll see. But I know it's a lot better winter this year than we've ever had in the last so many years. Mount Shasta is just beautiful. See it today.
I'll bet it is. Snow. All snow-capped and... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't see Lassen, though. He was shrouded today.
But are you closer to Shasta or to Lassen?
Lassen.
That's what I thought. Well, the boy. I should tell you, the boy is contemplating another trip out west. So we shall see. We shall see. He's torn. He's torn. But apparently, he has an offer to go back out and do some work out that way.
I know my stepson's enjoying where he's at right now on that big ranch in Nevada. I mean, it's well over 1 million acres of ranch. I mean, huge.
I mean, does somebody actually own the 1 million acres, or is this one of those ranching on federal lands kind of situations?
I'm not exactly sure, but I know somebody owns it.
I mean, there are people who own that much land. I wonder what that kind of land goes for, an acre.
I wouldn't know. I know they run a ghastly amount of cattle out there.
Well, I tell you what, let's see what's going on in the conversation. It's been a while since Jay Cruzen's been in the group. What do you say, Jay Cruzen?
Is he there?
Well, yeah, he's there, but he's not talking. Just added Rick.
Yeah, that's really the key to the program here is the talking part. Okay, well, while we wait to see who's hooked in and who's not, let me run over to the stress line and somewhere in Talibandiana. Hey, welcome to the program. Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hey, how are you?
Well, hang on, Rick. I just went over to the stress line. In Indiana, you're on the air. Oh, it's going to be one of those nights. Just a second. No, they're not. So, hey, Rick, how you doing? Oh, now Rick's going to be slow to answer.
No, I'm fine. I muted and had to get back to it to unmute. Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I just got back from a late lunch in Santa Monica, so I haven't gotten much done today. But thought I would join the group. How's everybody doing?
Awfully glad you did. No birthdays in the office today.
No birthdays. I met a lovely lady who I had met at a mixer a month ago before Thanksgiving, and had lunch with her in Santa Monica. So no birthdays, though. No birthdays. Plenty of chocolates that I've eaten.
Although, you know what? I noticed it was a while back, a month or so, maybe two. Sparky turned me on to that series on, what was it, Amazon Prime, Goliath?
Oh, you know, I haven't watched that yet.
Well, it's all lawyerish, and so you're going to love it.
Right. Yeah.
But it's all shot in and around Santa Monica. I didn't realize that at the time, but... Huh? Apparently it's shot, they use the Santa Monica Pier, which is more, it's like a permanent carnival, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah, exactly. Rides and Ferris wheel and that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was the location where they shot.
Okay.
And then the Billy Bob Thornton character lived in what looked like had been a former old motel that was converted to apartment spaces.
Ah, okay. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that show. I haven't yet had a chance to watch that. Speaking of Netflix, I think season 2 of The Man in the High Castle is now available for the first time today on
Yes, today today was yeah,
Netflix.
It's episode 1 of season 2, isn't it?
Oh, episode 1 of season 2. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I meant to say.
I get spoiled by binge watching.
Yeah, it does spoil you, you know? You don't have to worry about the commercials and all that crap, you know? So
I mean, you know, Agnes has been gone over to the grandbabies this week.
Mhm. Mhm.
And we had started watching that, hence all the Scottish stuff.
Vikings. The Vikings?
No, Scots.
Oh, okay.
We'd started watching Outlander together, which is this sort of, and there's I mean it's a bodice ripper because there's real live honest to God bodice ripping that goes on in it.
Okay.
There's several bodices get ripped. we started watching it, and it's got something for everybody.
Okay.
And, you know, a considerable amount of sex.
There you go.
and even nudity of both genders.
Oh my goodness.
Ugh. You gotta say ugh, Rick. Ugh.
Ugh. Ugh. I've gotta work on my Scots. I'm only 1/8 Scots, so there you go. It's showing. I'm mostly German.
But it's fun, and you know, it's set in a historically tumultuous time,
And sometimes, and sometimes I wonder about these things because they do a lovely job of making the English out to be some just plain old-fashioned vicious bastards.
I think they were, for some reason.
That's the thing. I think they were.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you might even call them a terrorist state.
Well, they were the original headloppers, if I'm not mistaken, the English, weren't they?
I don't know that they were original, but they certainly did their fair share of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were, you know, they'd take the body of somebody they didn't like that they'd killed and hang it on Tower Bridge until there was nothing left of it, and then they'd take the bones and scatter them to the four corners of the realm. And great folks.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. Oh, jeez.
And then they go around the world calling other people barbarians and destroying their cultures.
I guess it takes one to know one, as the old expression goes, right?
Well, yeah, but by the same token, it's not like the Scots were a bunch of little angels.
No,
I mean,
they weren't.
That's the thing you run into, and that's what makes these clowns over in the alt-white so sillily problematic. Oh, we want a safe space for our white European civilized culture heritage. Yeah, yeah. Tell it to the Marines.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I guess being civilized is sort of all relative these days, you know?
Well, exactly. I mean, that self-same time, there's brilliant stuff going on in the Enlightenment, but the Enlightenment was a parlor game for people who could afford it. Kind of like big green environmentalism is now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, one of the brilliant things, one of the beautiful things, one of the inspiring things about what happened, has happened and is happening out at Standing Rock is these aren't a lot of people sitting, this isn't Treebeard and Celery sitting around their loft in San Francisco or Soho talking about, you know, those poor people.
Jeez. Yeah, exactly.
These are real human beings who are standing up for their very right of existence. And, of course, that's what makes their job all the harder.
Yeah, exactly. Are they still out there in Standing Rock?
Oh, yeah, there's still a presence there. It's brutal, it's hateful, it's nasty.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still people there, and there will be people there. And I think they're treating it as sort of the calm before the storm.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what we, you know, let's remember one of those conflicts of interest that Benito Cheeto has is the fact that he has invested somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million in Energy Transfer Partners, and he says that I'm going to solve this very quick when I get in, real quick.
Jeez.
So one wonders if he's going to send in the 7th Cavalry just to mow people down like we've done in the past. You know, one really doesn't know. You know, just go whistling in with Gary O. Bang! We don't know.
Yeah, that was the president who took over from Grant, who was very brutal. Who was that? The president after Grant.
Well, no, Custer was really, really, he and Grant had a terribly contentious relationship. Grant even recalled him at one point in time.
Right.
And he refused to go, and people intervened on his behalf so that he could live long enough to be so proud and so haughty and so filled with hubris that he stupided his way into his own death.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But my understanding is Grant was actually kind of a moderate as regards Indian affairs. At least that's the way he was depicted in a show I watched, Hell on Wheels. I think it's an AMC show. And the president who succeeded him was the one who was depicted as brutal. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but, you know, at least that was the...
It's kind of a relative sliding scale, Rick, because Abraham Lincoln ordered the murder of no small handful of Sioux people in Minnesota during his term in office, before the Civil War, or either he or the Civil War were over and done with.
Oh, really? Wow.
They were like, I forget, what was it? Maybe, and I don't have the exact numbers. There were 64 natives who were slated to be hanged by the government, and he commuted a few of them and then hanged some, you know, just to make sure that the folks got the message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With malice toward none and charity toward all, he said.
There you go.
Long as you're white.
Yeah, right. Jeez. Well, there you go. Yeah, amazing, the American mythology, you know? And this whole thing with Russia now, it's, you know, it's very, you know, I really haven't seen the evidence yet. There's this gentleman named Stephen Cohen from, who's apparently a professor emeritus from both NYU and Princeton, who's a Russian studies expert, and seems pretty reasonable to me. He was on Don Lemon's show on CNN, and he was basically saying, look, I know the intelligence agencies have said the Russians were involved and all, but, you know, they haven't really shown me any evidence, you know? So, I mean, you know, who are we to believe, I guess, you know?
Well, and that's the mess you get into. It's spycraft for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, even today, of course, President Not Sure there as he was short time and getting ready to go to Hawaii. Yeah. Aloha, Barry. It said some of these things may not necessarily be even susceptible to proof in a court of law. And that's true. And besides that, what court of law are you going to sue Pooty Poot?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And exactly. Who are you going to get to serve him? That ought to be fun. Nice tiger. You're served.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, Rick.
Yes.
You wanted to know who preceded U.S. Grant?
Oh, no. Who was after him?
Oh, Rutherford B. Hayes.
Oh, okay. He was depicted as a real, you know, hawk on Indian affairs. I mean, who knows?
And you're absolutely right about that AMC program that you mentioned, Hell on Wheels.
Yeah.
Great program.
Yes, stunning. It is a good program, yeah.
And I think it's on Netflix. They carry a lot of AMC shows.
And what is it about?
Yeah.
And it's wrapped, I believe.
It's the story
eternity.
Of the It's
so
the story
I,
of the building.
I think they should all be on there, all the seasons.
Yeah, yeah. Bob asked what it's about. It's about the building of the Transcontinental Railroad.
Ah, that hence
the
wheels
that went into that, and all the fraud involved by the radio, you know, the financing companies, the railroad companies, and you know what happened to the Chinese laborers, what happened to the Indians that were in the way. I mean, that kind of thing. It's very you know, the relations between the freed slaves and the you know, let's say the Irish laborers on the railroad, and you know.
And it's the Chinese.
Exactly. It's a very well done show, and they you know, they show how it, you know, went from obviously what the Pacific, what was that? What was the name of the railroad from the Pacific? It was the
it was the Southern Pacific, and the what was the other one headed west? It's been a while since I watched it.
Yeah, yeah.
Union Pacific and Southern Pacific. I think.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, the Union
Pacific. But another aspect, the main character, the protagonist, is an ex-Confederate soldier.
Right.
Whose wife and children were wiped out under circumstances that I won't go into in case you want to watch the show.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Also, he kind of looks to find out who was ultimately responsible for that, you know, to seek some sort of revenge.
Yes, he searches them out, let's just say, you know.
Yeah.
So he's a very conflicted character. He's a lot like the character Rick in The Walking Dead in terms of kind of, he's kind of an anti-hero. You kind of like him, but he's also got a lot of bad in him, but he's basically a good guy, you know. Kind of like one of those guys, kind of a tortured soul who's like just trying to, you know, do the right thing most of the time, but sometimes they, you know, sometimes they just got to, like, get their revenge on people, you know?
In other words, reflecting of the fact that, contrary to right wing views, everything is not either black or white. That there's a ton of gray.
No kidding. You got it.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. Yeah, you would like this, Bob. It's a historical drama. It's about and the guy who plays one of the Eastern Railroad barons, who actually was basically a fraud, Bohannon. No, Bohannon is the main character's name. And the what the hell was
the railroad executive?
Yeah, what was his name?
The actor or the character?
Well, if you can remember the actor, you might be able to remember the character.
Well, he's an Irish actor.
Ask Punky. Punky knows. I hear Punky talking.
Well, wait a minute. I'm pulling up the list of characters.
There you go.
Because, like I say, Colin Meaney is the actor.
Yes, he's very good, yeah.
But, I had to drop cable some years ago, earlier this year.
Yeah.
So I was away from AMC. I missed the final season, but it should be showing up soon on Netflix.
I think so, yeah. It just ended on AMC, I think, in the last, several months anyway.
Yeah, it was a little earlier this year, but Colin Meaney's character is Thomas Doc Durant.
Oh, Durant, yes, Durant.
And,
Thomas Durant.
And the fellow we were talking about earlier, who's like the protagonist, his character name is Cullen Bohannon.
Yeah.
But Bob, you would, that show is right up your alley.
I'd never heard of it, so I'm gonna check it out, because what I was getting at earlier is we started watching Outlander, and then Agnes went off to the grandbabies, and I kind of cheated and kept watching. We're gonna have to sit and watch that together. So I've got something now that I can go and that way I won't be, you know what I mean? And
cheating on your wife.
Well, you know, in a sort of binge watching kind of way, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that. I mean, I do the same thing with my son. I watch a lot of shows with him, and he'll invariably fall asleep. And so then once he falls asleep, I try to stop where I'm at and then, like, watch, let's say, something on Turner Classic Movies or something like that, you know, that he would never want to watch, you know? So,
well, Bob, I have another one that you can add to your watch list. It's on Netflix. It's called The Untold History of the United States. It's a 10-part documentary by Oliver Stone.
By Oliver Stone, yeah, I'm familiar with that.
It touches on a little bit of what you guys are talking about, so you can work that into your schedule. I recommend that as well.
I've seen bits and pieces of that.
Yeah, it's worth a watch.
Oh, it's quite good.
I just lately I've been engaged in attempts at escapism.
Right.
Good luck with
Wonder
that.
Wonder why.
It's a defensive mechanism. It's a very healthy thing, Bob.
And so the fourth and final season of Black Sails kicks up, I think, in January, okay, as mentioned. And that's the first three seasons of that are just fun to watch. It comes as a bit of a surprise. You know, we think about the Caribbean and we think, oh, yeah, go down there, relax, drink something really, really strong out of a coconut shell, blah, 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 blah. No, getting posted to the West Indies in the 18th century was something that only happened to you if you had somehow managed to fuck up seriously or didn't have enough power not to get posted there.
Right. Right. So it's a pirate drama, basically.
Oh, absolutely. Cool. Yar! Yar, it's a pirate drama.
Yar, she blows!
With lots of sexual contact.
There you go.
Yeah, apparently, and that's something I've noticed in both of these shows. For people of a certain age like me who grew up watching actual television, and you know, not stag films, man, these series have a lot. They got a lot of fucking in them.
They do. They do. Well, you know, in the 70s. The mores were actually, TV was more liberal in a lot of ways. Like some stuff you could watch at late night, you could actually see some, you know, full frontal nudity, You know, it wasn't like, you know.
Well, och, I'm here to tell you, I'm here to tell you that in Outlander, there are some actual penises.
There you go.
Because now we're marketing to everybody.
There you go.
By the way, Rick and Bob, I just checked on Netflix, and Hell on Wheels, all five seasons are on Netflix. The whole shebang is there.
Oh, there you go.
And I'm sorry about Punky. I would put him in the bathroom, except it's kind of rainy and chilly down here today, and I don't want him to get, get the shivers.
Oh no, he's definitely contributing to the conversation, Scott.
Yeah, but what is he saying? He could be calling us all assholes.
I know what he's saying. I'm not going to tell you though. I know what he's saying though.
Oh God. Is it my haircut? Is he making derisive points about my haircut?
He's talking about the Orange Menace, I think. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if that's all it is.
Yeah. I see Jason. Is Jason here?
I don't know. We've been calling on him.
I see his picture here on the screen. Is Tracy here?
Yeah, I'm here.
There's Tracy.
Hey, how you doing, Tracy?
I was just listening to the white guys talk. I was wondering when you were going to let the Negro speak.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, here we go.
Well, it's your turn, Tracy. You got the floor, baby.
No, I don't have nothing to say, really. I just want to talk.
Oh, you're just busting our ass. That's all. Okay.
Yeah, because I do it. You know, I mean, come on. If I don't say something, you know, about white people, at least in the first 10 minutes of a conversation, or about food, then there's something. Then you guys might think there's something wrong. So, you know.
And you do it, you know, you do it with real panache, too, so.
Yeah, you know, because a lot of times when I, you know, when I tune in on Fridays just to listen on, a lot of times I can't because I'm, you know, there's somebody in the car or what have you, so I have to just listen. And so it just tickles me to listen to you guys. Hell on Wheels, huh? Now, Bob, I know you couldn't really get into the Get Down. I know, but I want you to watch the last two episodes. I think if you watch the last two episodes, then you'll be able to go back and watch the rest. But the last two episodes are fucking great. And that's all I got to say. I'm not going to say anything else about the
This get is Hell on Wheels? This is Hell on Wheels?
No, the Get Down. It's all totally nothing to do with Hell on Wheels. You wanted escapism. And I think if you watch, that would be your perfect way of doing escapism, because I find myself when I'm like really depressed, which has been for the last few weeks, and I don't know why.
Imagine.
I wonder why. Jeez.
Imagine. Jeez. Well, really? I watched The Get Down, especially the last two episodes, and you just can't help but smile. It just takes me back to my 11-year-old, 12-year-old self listening to, you know, hearing, you know, the hip, the Sugar Hill Gang for the first time, you know, and the beginning, you know.
I can start time. At the beginning. I mean, that's not a problem.
Well, you said you tried. You said you tried it, and you said
I did, and I mean, I. But it wasn't. It wasn't necessarily a lack of interest kind of thing. It was a shit catches up with me kind of thing.
Oh, well, I think it is pure escapism, and I just love. Besides the fact, I love Jimmy Smits and Giancarlo Esposito. Both of whom are two of my favorite actors. And they're in it, and they're marvelous. Just marvelous. So, you know, try it again. I'm doing that escapism too thing. My son got the Amazon Fire Stick, and my son found an app that you add onto the Fire Stick that you can pretty much get rid of cable with. And I was, I found movies that I'm like, I was just messing around. He's like, pick a movie. I guarantee you, you can find it on this app. And what did I do? I found the Strange Love of Martha Ivers. And that was in there. I mean, come on. What are the, I even found the entire, hi, son.
Hello,
everybody say hi to Alex. Say hi, Alex.
Hi.
Hey, Alex.
Okay. Hey, Alex. Everybody.
Hello, Alex.
Yeah.
Hi, Alex.
I was I even found Maude, the TV show Maude, you know, the entire series. And it was great because did you know? Okay, see, this is some pretty good trivia. You know the theme song for Maude, and then there's Maude and all that.
Oh yeah.
Do you know who sang that?
No.
Donnie Hathaway.
Hmm. I'll be damned.
Yeah, I'll be damned moment as well, because you know I'm watching the end credits, and it's a song performed by Donnie Hathaway. I'm like, get the fuck out of here! Yeah. And then you gotta go. Then I'm like, how long? Then in my morbid mind, how far before that? Before he committed suicide, you know, did he do that? It's like, but Donnie Hathaway, who has, you know, he sings one of my favorite Christmas songs of all time, you know, this Christmas. So it's like, but I love that theme song. And to watching Maude, because I watched the first two episodes of the series, and it was just amazing. There was this one episode about, and this guy was a conservative, and he was going, the episode was about the two kids were playing doctor, that, you know, and of course the conservative was saying that the boys should be punished, and he goes railing on about, he goes from one subject to the other and never staying on point. And I'm like, and that was in 1972. And how many years ago was that? Okay, quick. 44 years ago, and nothing's changed. Because every time he would go on one different, he would go from one subject to the next, Mom was like, well, that's not what we were talking about. And he went from pornography to permissive raising the children to all this, never staying on point, but just throwing out all these different things and hoping nobody was paying attention. And just think, 44 years later and nothing's changed, has it?
I watched next to the last film that Peter Sellers did with Shirley MacLaine, Melvin Douglas.
Being there.
Oh, God.
I just watched that the other day, and I thought I liked, you know, it's so funny. I thought I liked that movie, and I watched it because I had the memory of seeing it when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, and I'm like, it was, I watched it, and I didn't think it was as good as everybody thought it was. But I get what it was about. I mean, just the fact that he was an idiot, but he was white.
Well, not only that, but here you've got a guy, the main character, bumbling through life. Everything he knows, he learned from watching television. And he hobnobs with people up to and including industrialists and the president himself, played brilliantly by Jack Warden. And then his benefactor dies, and the people on the board of directors of the benefactor's multinational, huge conglomerate-type company, as they're carrying the benefactor off to his final resting place, they're discussing candidates that they should support in the upcoming election, and lo and behold, they seem to concur that Chauncey Gardner, the idiot gardener who knows everything he knows by virtue of TV, should be the person that they get behind. And it's, God, does it get any realer than that, boys and girls?
Well, and on top of it all, I was watching, I think it was the SEC Championship. This is going to seem like a very strange segue, but trust me. I was watching the SEC Championship between the University of Florida and the University of Alabama. And it turns out that Florida has a brilliant, brilliant cornerback. I think he was a freshman or something, and he's made a bit of a splash for himself. And I couldn't help wondering, it's like, is this possible that because his name's Chauncey Gardner?
No.
Yes.
No way. Really?
6 feet tall, 194 pounds, 18 years, 11 months old.
Does he like to watch?
No, he likes to hit people.
Chauncey Gardner, wow.
Yeah. But then again, I've been noticing these things for a few years now. a few years back, your beloved Northwestern University, Rick, had a quarterback whose name was Kafka. Pretty sure.
How long ago, how old is Being Bear? What year was that made? Was it in the 80s or the 90s?
79.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Oh, that's right, because Peter Sellers has been there for a while. So, hey, you know, maybe his family got the joke.
Yeah, go and
18 years old.
You tell Raphael. Yes.
I've got some breaking political news if you want it real quick.
Okay. Do we need to hide under the table for this?
Donald Trump is an idiot.
I think it's essentially harmless. It just popped up on my Facebook feed. Donald Trump demands Billie Holiday change name to Billie Christmas.
Bob, I've got a...
Off the hell with you, Scott.
Well, thank you, Bob. Another vote of confidence.
I've got a terrible segue, if you don't mind me.
You've got a burning question, Steve.
Yeah, I do. And I want to pose this to the whole room, and especially you, Bob. I was watching an NPR interview with President Obama today, and let me just preface this by saying he's probably the smartest president in my lifetime, but he said something that just chilled me to the bone today. He said that he was going to retaliate against the Russians at the time of air choosing. Does that sound familiar to anybody else?
I heard that too, and it just sounded kind of hollow to me. I mean, we will retaliate for what was done in the election at a time and place of our choosing. They'll never know.
Junior said that before we went into Iraq, and do we really want to go head-to-head with the Russians?
Yeah, I don't think it means the same thing coming from president. Not sure that it meant coming from dim leader.
Okay, all right. Maybe I just...
It means that he's going to order the NSA to fuck with Putin's Netflix account.
I'm hoping that, you know, the way I understand it...
Or to, you know, send him borscht-flavored pizzas that he didn't order.
The way I understand it, as far as cyber attacks, the U.S. uses more of a sniper approach, and Russian uses more of a butter-the-whole-bread approach, which means potentially we could all be out of power, internet, food, and all that crap for who knows. I mean, am I reading too much into this, do you think? Or
you know, I just don't think we're going to do anything. I really don't. I don't think there's much we can do. They did what they did. And they had accomplices, and oh well. And so, you know, I fully expect that the phone's going to ring at Pooty Poots Dasha, and there's going to be this voice on the other end doing a bad Russian accent saying, "Do you have Prince Albert in a can?"
And that'll be it. Well, let's take this.
It's winter in Mother Russia. Is your refrigerator running?
Do you think we should retaliate? Part two question.
I might jump in there.
Yes, please.
Okay, go snort.
It's kind of like a nuclear submarine. You don't want to plan on firing it multiple times. So once you pop out and exploit something, it's likely that they might close that hole. And it's more important to say, okay, you got us. We're keeping our holes open for us to exploit when we need them.
No, I get that point entirely. Far better to know that the stuff is there and that you can abuse it as needed if you ever need to for something serious. I mean, like, trying to, let's say we would retaliate by messing with a Russian election. To what end? Really? It's not like democracy's flourishing over there.
I wonder if we have the capability to tap into Putin's bank account, because I heard someone, one of the analysts on one of the talk shows the other day, saying that his net worth, or it might have been Rachel Maddow, come to think of it, his net worth is something like $85 billion. He's supposedly the richest person on Earth, okay? And a lot of his fortune, virtually all of it, in fact, came about after the fall of the former Soviet Union and after Boris Yeltsin went away, when basically Russia didn't have a pot to piss in and was selling off all of the things that otherwise had been government-owned entities in terms of resources and things that help make a country great in terms of its ability to operate in the global economy. And those were being sold off to the highest bidder. The bankers were heavily involved. But do our people, apparently they know, and Snork probably knows this, apparently our people on the technical end know way, way more than any of us realize, maybe even that the Russians realize, that we are able to do. And you don't tip your hand in a case like that. You wait for a propitious time, and you use your power sparingly, hopefully in a way that there'll be no doubt as to who did it, and little, if anything, that the person it's being done to can do in return. But do we have the ability to tap into drain his fucking account?
I wouldn't know that. But people aren't aware of how many electronic intelligence organizations we have. And we have officially 26 intelligence organizations in the United States. Most people know of the CIA, the FBI, and possibly the NSA.
And the DIA.
Yeah, the big one is the NRO, National Reconnaissance Organization, and their slogan is Total Information Awareness. And that might be the answer to your question.
Well, and there's another thing here, too. If Pooty Poot is valued at $85 billion, it's a question of $85 billion what's.
Also, I wouldn't want to be the one. It seems like it would be a suicide mission to be the person that would walk into the bank and do anything to his bank account.
For instance, the exchange rate of rubles to dollars is 1 ruble equals 0.016 American dollars. There's 62 rubles to the dollar. So, all kidding aside, wherever that money he's stolen has it came from, it's likely not all in rubles.
Oh, hell no.
And that means there's some leverage there. And of course, you know, the thing that matters to him is what matters to him is getting rid of the sanctions. That's why Tillerson is the Secretary of State nominee. That's why there was so much drama around it, and so many bullshit stories about how he was desperate to figure out what he did. He had to have a Secretary of State, and finally, out of the kindness of her heart, kind of sleazy rice goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. And Bob Gates, both agreed, who, curiously enough, sit on the board of ExxonMobil, hey, why don't you put our top dog in as Secretary of State? He's going to be retiring next year anyway. And meanwhile, he's already, Exxon has this deal going with the Russian oil and gas outfit to drill in the Arctic that Exxon publicly complained last year was costing Exxon $1 billion, $1 billion. And so why not? Who better? And if, in fact, Trump is broke as hell, which I strongly suspect. You know, all his money is in all of his properties, and he can't get back out of his properties what he's got in it, and that's why he couldn't disclose his taxes, and that is why he cannot set up a blind trust, because it would have negative dollars in it. So he's got a vested interest before he ever even takes office in getting those sanctions lifted for his master. Because his master can then thank him by getting the oligarchs to whom he is deeply in hock to cut him some slack and, you know, not put horse's head, not put moose and squirrel's head in his bed. And I don't think that's just too covered up in the idea of a conspiracy theory. Because they're real things. The ExxonMobil deal is a real thing. The Putin has to have has his money in several pots thing is a real thing, and all of those things can be screwed with. So, you know, there's that. Oh, and here at the top of the hour, let me mention before we go further, because remember we try to raise $66.66 per hour. We're kind of behind. We've gone 2 hours, and thanks very kindly to Keith and to David and to Glenn. We've gone from $295 in fundraising to go down to $245 in fundraising to go. So hopefully that will alleviate. One other thing, and of course PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. One other thing worth considering, I saw this earlier today, and talk about things that kind of give you the chills. Sweden's, hi Scott, our buddy Scott. Sweden's towns and villages have been ordered to make preparations for a possible military attack in the latest sign of the country's growing anxiety at its newly belligerent Russian neighbor. The country's civil contingency agency last week sent a letter to local authorities across the country asking them to maintain operation centers in underground bunkers, ensure that a system of emergency sirens is in place, and to be open to cooperating on war exercises with the Swedish Armed Forces. This is kind of serious. In a state of war, civil defense for municipalities is no different from any of the other services they should provide. The letter read, instructing local governments to ensure their ability to maintain their functions during disturbed situations and at the most extreme in a war scenario. The dramatic call comes as Sweden returns to the total defense strategy it maintained during the Cold War, reconstituting its old coastal anti-ship missile system, placing an armored division on the exposed Baltic island of Gotland, and making plans to restart compulsory conscription as early as 2018. This strategy is not new. We used it during the Cold War, and we're going to now strengthen coordination regarding civil defense. Magnus Deberg Eck, who is leading the civil defense operation for MSB, told the Svenska Dagbladet newspaper. What is new is that the security situation in our neighborhood has worsened, and that we must therefore make preparations regarding the threat of war and conflict. I mean, that's operation centers in bunkers need to continue to be held in ready reserve. In special cases, decommissioning or sale can take place, but first there must be a dialogue between MSB and the local region, the letter warned. Sweden's government decided to bring back civil defense last year as part of its defense policy for 2016 to 2020. Svante Verger, the press officer for MSB, told the Sydsvenskan newspaper, "There is nothing to suggest that war is likely, but we have been given an order from the government to plan for it." How charming.
What about Finland, Bob?
Well, and that's what I was about to say. If that's Sweden, Finland has got to be extra special concerned. I mean, there's a history there.
Yeah, they fought the Russians during World War II.
And they fought them back. That was kind of amazing. They fought him to a draw for a couple of years, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because they were, you know, the Russians made the mistake of trying to attack him in the winter, and they were, you know, that was playing to their strength because they're, you know, fighting on skis and so forth, you know. You know, they're just very, you know, they're very adept at that kind of thing.
But remember, Pooty Poot is just a big, lovable, cuddly, squishy bear, and we've nothing to fear from him.
Right, no, of course not.
Butter wouldn't melt in their mouth, at least not
believe
in the winter,
me.
Not in Moscow.
Believe me, says Trump. Believe me.
Yeah. Well, that could certainly light the fuse, couldn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Andy out in Redwood City. Hey, Andy, what's up? Andy.
Mr. Kincaid, how you doing?
What's happening? Say hi to the group.
Howdy.
Group, say howdy. That, see, we do the howdies. That way we know everybody hears everybody else.
Hi, Andy.
How you doing?
Loud and clear, Bob.
Okay, we're good. Go, Andy. Go ahead, Andy.
Did you want me to talk?
Yeah, I came to you.
I sent an email. I sent one earlier today, and I sent one on the 10th.
Okay.
Regarding the program right after the apocalypse, the election. And I just think overall the theme of the program, taking the heat off the Democratic leadership for totally failed policies for the working class and putting the emphasis on identity politics with the racial aspects of what's going on with the election. I think it's just totally missing the point. And I think economic well-being and hitting somebody in the pocketbook where it hurts and not having a good economy for the working class, I just think really sunk the Democrats. And I think running on Mr. Obama's legacy or his policies by Ms. Clinton was just totally absurd. This is coming from somebody that didn't vote for Obama in 2012 either, because I thought he had failed. His first 4 years, he totally failed, I thought.
So in 12, you thought...
Congress isn't cooperating and the other side's not cooperating. You go to the people and you explain that to the public. You use the bully pulpit and you press the issues you want to get done with the people. That's what he had to do. That's what Ronald Reagan did, even though I hate quoting him. That's what, we'll quote somebody I do like, Franklin Roosevelt did. You go to the people, and you go and you go and go to that well. That's what he had to do, but he didn't. And I heard somebody on your program, I think it was a guy from Wisconsin, Michael maybe, say that Mr. Obama was a center-left Democrat. Really? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? He is so far to the right as far as a Democrat goes. Just look at who he supports and candidates. Right? Anytime you had a Senate race and you had a progressive in it, he wasn't with the left. He never was. He always gave the middle finger to the professional left every chance he got. Center left? Are you kidding me? What happened in Connecticut? With that race, what was it, Joe Lieberman against...
you mean when he went and campaigned for Lieberman against...
What was the guy's name? And then Blanche Lincoln against Halter in Arkansas. He was with Lincoln. And Pennsylvania, you have Arlen Specter against Joe Sestak. He supports Specter. You got Colorado. You got Bennett against... Romanoff's the progressive, he supports Bennett. I mean, you name it, right wingers, and you got Grayson down in Florida. Who does he support? But Patrick Murphy. Everywhere he has a chance to take out a progressive, he took him out. He cut the legs under the progressives. And boy, I could just go on and on with the economic statistics. You know that, where this economy has failed the working class, workforce participation. 13 million jobs never came back. 66%. Down to 62%. Job creation never came back. He only created 13 million jobs since 2010. He needed 17 million just to keep the new entrance to the economy. Medium income never came back to the before the recession levels. Poverty actually grew while Mr. Obama was in office. More young Americans ended up living in the basements of their parents' homes after graduating college than ever in history. More schools with 75% students that received a free lunch, that received a free lunch increased from 9% to 16% from 2001 to 2014.
Hold on.
I mean, you go on and on with the crushing
losses
to the working class.
Jay Cruzan, hold on.
You can't get reelected on that. Party can't get elected on that record. Period.
Well,
a lot of that shit has to do with the Republicans not working with him. I mean, you know, I'm not the biggest Obama fan in the damn world, but I'm not going to sit here and let you trash him for all that. All that shit ain't his fault.
Well, there was there was a Congress involved.
Congress involved. Hell of a lot of Congress that didn't do a goddamn thing to help.
Yeah, that's the same Congress that had the meeting the day he was inaugurated and said, we don't care what he wants, we're not going to let him have it.
Exactly.
But he had the House when he first got in.
Oh, he had it for what?
Up until 2010 when he lost it.
60 days.
And he lost it because he didn't put progressive issues.
No, he lost it because of the teabagger. I mean, I guess we could do this all night, but he lost it because of the teabagger revolution.
Yeah, but when Kennedy died, he lost his filibuster-proof majority. When was it? What did he have, 30, 60, 90 days?
Well, I mean, if I recall correctly, when the Democrats took the Senate, it took, 6 months? 9? To give him Al Franken to give him his 60 votes. And even
the House, though.
And even then, it takes two houses to pass. It takes both houses to pass legislation.
He had the House, and he should have gone to the people with his issues that he couldn't pass. But quite frankly, he didn't even try.
Well, where was he going to go to the people, Andy? I mean,
what happened to that? He promised card check.
Yeah, you know what? Barack Obama didn't kill card check. I was actually there for that. I was sitting in a Senate room in a Senate hearing room on the day after the inauguration. Guy James was with me. And Harry Reid said, we will have card check by summer. You know why we didn't have card check by summer?
Because we didn't have 60 votes in the Senate.
Blanche Lincoln and Ben Nelson, who were both nominally Democrats, said, oh, no, we can't dare to let people earn a living wage. Not in the middle of an economic crisis like this. I mean, they said that. It's verifiable. And that's where the Employee Free Choice Act went. It wasn't like Barack Obama looked up and said, well, I've changed my mind. It was killed by Democrats collaborating with Republicans in the Senate.
Why didn't he fight for it, Bob?
Well, what do you want him to do? Go and, what, punch Mitch McConnell in the nose?
People. That's why he lost, Bob. If he lost, he did not fight. I told him I didn't vote for him in 2012. He knew he was not for the working class then. And then he supports Blanche Lincoln. He was saying Blanche Lincoln killed it. He supported her.
Well,
he supported her to the hill.
If I could weigh in real quick here, I think the biggest problem the Democrats had was they didn't have a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate for very long. It took Franken quite a while to get his seat, and then shortly after that, Kennedy got brain cancer. And then the 2010 elections came around, and the Democrats stayed home, and the Republicans swept into the House, and they made major gains in the Senate.
So they basically regrew
the lines. The census was done. They did redistricting, and made a lot of states much more.
Rick, can we please remember one other thing?
Yeah.
You say that you use the term filibuster-proof majority.
Right.
That's 60 votes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Under the leadership of Mitch McConnell, the filibuster was used more than several previous Congresses combined. Like 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 Congresses combined.
I would imagine everyone since the inception of Congress.
Yeah.
Because they had determined that it did not matter what Barack Obama wanted, they would not let him have it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what you call obstructionism. And while this is not the Barack Obama Defense Network, there's a reason we call him president, not sure. The fact of the matter is, he was not in charge of the Congress. And the Congress cannot be given a pass for this stuff. Now, the problem that
the
flows...
The fact of the matter is, he should have called out Congress.
He did.
He should have and he should have gone to the people
he
and
did,
told them
what
was
what?
Going on.
The goddamn news media doesn't cover that shit, dude.
With the Republicans.
They don't care.
Andy, he called out the Congress. He called out the Congress.
The whole 8 years,
he played patty cake
with them.
Okay, I'm sorry for yelling.
But, Andy, he called out the Congress. He spoke repeatedly on the fact that the Congress was not working, that the Congress was opposing things that the American people desperately needed. And then whatever it was he said,
patty cake with Trump.
He's
Mr. Diplomat. He's not a fighter. He was never for the working people. He was never for helping the working class people. It wasn't him. He's got his, just like Bill Clinton got his, and he's going to become rich when he's out of office. He'll do his venture capital thing, and he'll have a good old time. I wish he would stop making excuses for this guy. I really do. And look beyond what he is just as a person and what he did.
Well, okay, in a real world, Andy.
He was close to the working class people, and that's why he lost.
And he didn't lose. Hillary Clinton lost.
No, he lost it. It was him.
No.
She could not run on his record, and she tried to do that.
She could have given, like I said in the first hour, she could have given away free cars, and the Republicans would have been sitting there, well, that's not a good enough car.
People didn't want another 4 years of Obama with a Hillary Clinton label on it.
You know, I don't...
I think I've had enough of that. I'm going to hang up.
Well, stick around, Jay Cruzen. But the fact of the matter is, in a real world, Andy, who would you have? I mean, in the real world we have here, how do you convince people who were perfectly happy to form a coalition with the Klan? How do you convince those people living in Alabama to vote for a woman that they've been told for 25 years is the devil? How do you do that?
You convince people that you're on their side by action, by doing things that actually uplift you. Now, of course, I'm no fan of Mr. Trump, but just going to that carrier plant and trying to save those jobs, those are good optics. Obama had 8 years to do something like that. He didn't lift a finger. You didn't see him in Wisconsin, where he had his greatest opportunity of all, to go help working class people with the right to work state votes that were going on in Wisconsin and Michigan.
Oh, I know that goes back.
Opportunity.
That goes back to the. I remember when he said that
to the working class people, and he didn't. Here, Trump is getting great optics in carrier, even though we know there's a lot of baloney there. It's great optics. Obama had 8 years he could have done that. But he stayed away from working class people's issues.
Well, Alma just wrote in and said, what does rehashing Obama now that Trump is the president-elect accomplish?
Yeah. Do anybody hear Keith?
Because we lost an election. Heads should roll. Nancy Pelosi shouldn't be where she is.
Can I chime in?
You shouldn't be in charge of the House. She shouldn't have been after 2010 when they lost the House. Chuck Schumer shouldn't be where he is.
Observation at some point.
Hold on a second. Now, Nancy Pelosi passed the most progressive legislation that has ever come out of the House of Representatives since the House of Representatives.
Oh, baloney. Oh, baloney.
Well, you can holler baloney.
They killed single payer in California.
It all died.
They killed single payer here. Get out of here. Nancy Pelosi passed almost a billionaire, for God's sake.
The House of Representatives.
Baloney.
Go back and you can look at it. You can look at the votes. You can go back and look at the records.
That's what she did to Anthony Weiner.
Speaker of the House.
He was a big single payer guy. She nailed him as his ass as soon as they could get him out of Congress. You know, of course he's got problems. But I think the major reason they got rid of him is because he was so big on single payer.
Get out of here, Nancy Pelosi.
Can I chime in with an
observation? She's worth $600 goddamn million dollars. She's so far removed from the working class, it isn't goddamn funny.
Okay, Andy, stand down for a minute. Other people would like to speak. Go, Scott.
All right. This typifies a problem that has chapped my ass for some time now, and that is we will be rehashing all that has gone before, probably, I mean, if we're true to form, as Democrats, progressives, liberals, whatever, we will rehash endlessly, incessantly, what has gone before. We'll do it through the midterms in 2 years. We may be even doing it up to and beyond the 2020 presidential election. And that's the problem. My overall concern is that we've lost track of the fact that you don't create your future from your past. You create your future from your future. The best the past can do is inform the future and inform the present. But it devolves into endless rehashing, and nothing ever changes.
You've got to look at your past to know where you're going so you don't go back to the past again, Scott. Come on.
I missed your first part.
You've got to learn from your mistakes.
There's another statement that needs to be addressed here, and that is a simple three-word statement. Don't feed the trolls.
No, it's not a matter of feeding the trolls, because I operate on the notion
we're feeding a troll.
That's name calling. That's out of line.
That Bob has suggested all along. We have a conversation where one person says something and somebody else says something. What I'm saying is there is limited benefit to constant rehashing. The time now is to learn from what's happened, gather people together, and start appealing to people who can help us, as opposed to saying, well, those folks down there would never vote for us.
That's
maybe
what
some
I
of
said.
Them won't,
anybody hear
but
Keith
lots
Hubble's
of,
speech
a
last
lots
night?
Of the, maybe some of them won't vote with us, but some of them will. And to the extent that we can enlist them in the process of creating a future that works for us all, we will be successful. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think the Sparky, say what you were going to say. I heard you, but I don't know if others did.
Well, you were always talking about the future. Did anybody hear Keith Ellison and Bernie Sanders live stream last night?
I don't think we did. Tell us, Sparky.
Well, he's talking about what he's going to do if he's elected DNC chair. And he doesn't have just a 50-state plan. He's talking about every county.
Exactly. Getting it granular. That's the new word we like to use. Getting it granular down to the county level.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. That's what I was getting at, folks.
And there's a lot of truth in that, because there's been so much blather about Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Oh, Bruga Bruga Donna Brazile. Oh, Bruga Bruga John Podesta. The fact of the matter is, the DNC itself is a relatively tiny organization, and the people at the head of it are there as largely political appointees. Podesta was Hillary's campaign manager, whatever. But the Democratic Party exists as a result of its county organizations, and it's changing those county organizations where the difference gets made. I mean, I'm no expert, but I did happen to watch it happen this year. I watched a whole bunch of delegates from a whole bunch of county organizations walk into the West Virginia Democratic Convention, which admittedly, we got our asses pasted by the Trumpanzees. But the fact of the matter is, knowing that, they still passed one of the most progressive state platforms, not in the history of West Virginia, but in the country. And it was done, and the only way that it was defeated, I mean, the platform passed, but then Joe Manchin, who is a Quisling, orchestrated a coup when his hand-picked scum was about to be thrown out of the state executive committee. You know, these things can happen. And they need to happen at the granular level that Sparky reports that Keith Ellison was talking about. Now, can the Democratic Party organize around and I'm just dealing with the reality of what Merca is. Can the Democratic Party be organized and rally around a black guy who's also a Muslim? Well, that's a risk I'm willing to take. But I think we also have to understand, you know, Bernie talked about economic populism. Trump talked about economic populism. Bernie was genuine. But they ran to the polls for Trump because he mixed in that most toxic and most potent of chemicals in a populist stew. He mixed in fear. He mixed in racism. He mixed in bigotry. He mixed in misogyny. He mixed in xenophobia. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to back away from the fact that I think that was the deciding factor. Because it certainly appears to have been.
If you hit somebody in the pocketbook, can't put food on the table, you can't live a good quality life in this country, Bob, you're not going to continue voting for the same party you were voting for.
Well, so Andy, answer me a question, Andy.
For Obama.
Answer me a question, Andy.
20%.
I'm real about this. I got a question.
For Obama.
I got a question.
What happened?
I got a question here, Andy. Were those people that you're talking about who could no longer live a good life? Were they living the life of Riley under Bush?
I'm one of those people.
Were they living the life of Riley?
Living a much better life before the recession, on an order of magnitude better. Okay, I'm one of those people. All right, go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to continue because Dim Leaders administration never, ever, ever caught up with the job losses that happened during his administration. And ultimately, the crash, well, Great Recession, whatever we're going to call it, came on his watch. Now, I seem to recall that there were a lot of hurting people in this country during the years 2001 to 2009, and that had a lot to do with the election of Barack Obama. So I think there's a little bit of disingenuity in trying to pretend that the Obama administration existed in some sort of vacuum and that the economic gutting of the middle class hasn't been going on since January 20th, 1981.
It has. No question about it. It has. And we would have hoped Mr. Obama would have turned it around, but he didn't.
And at the risk of pissing people off who are listening, because I'm getting emails going, Jesus Christ, this is irrelevant.
Okay, well,
didn't the Congress
NSA,
have any responsibility at all?
Had anything to do with hacking? And I'm also with Craig Murray, the ex-ambassador to Uzbekistan from the UK. I put that in that email. You got that? Believes that there was a whistleblower who let out the emails, and he supposedly met that whistleblower who actually gave the emails to WikiLeaks. So I'm not with you on any of this. As far as I'm concerned, that Russian thing is all a smokescreen for the benefit of the Democratic leadership. So they keep their jobs and no heads roll. We just keep on going down the same neoliberal policies.
Well, how are they keeping their jobs, Andy? Donna Brazile's gone. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is gone. There is no head of the DNC right now.
Gone is Alan Grayson.
Huh?
Alan Grayson is gone. He doesn't have a position. Debbie Wasserman Schultz won her seat. She's still in Congress. Just like a guy named Charlie Rangel. He's still there. Guy's a crook, a criminal, but he was okay for Nancy Pelosi to keep him there. But if you're for single payer like an Anthony Weiner, you're gone. You don't get any support from the Democrats. They cut your throat as quick as they could. I guess it's only justice that he helped sink Clinton's campaign to.
Well, maybe that's what that was about.
Hung him to dry.
But the fact right. that, but the question.
I'll get off the phone, you guys, and I'll listen to you. I can't hear you guys very well anyway because my line is really bad or the connection's really bad. All right, so.
All right, Andy, have a good one. Take care.
You go. Hey, let me know too who West Virginia is playing in the bowl game.
Oh, Miami.
To catch that game.
Miami.
Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I think it's Wednesday the 28th.
Okay.
It's the American Pump Association Rising Sea Level Bowl in Orlando. Now, all kidding aside, it's in Orlando and it's Wednesday the 28th. And they are old nasty rivals, and I would like very badly to beat them. But of course, going into a bowl game, I'll be watching it with a blanket over my head through the cracks between my fingers.
All right, I wrote that down. I'm going to try to catch that.
Yeah, I haven't seen an over-under on it yet, but take the points. See you, Andy. Take care.
All right, you too. You guys have a happy holidays, and to be undiplomatic, you guys have a Merry Christmas, huh?
All right, happy bye holidays bye. To you and all the other things, too. Later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now.
I don't do Christmas.
Yeah, you don't do none of it, Sparky.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, come on, knuckle under. There'll be a December 25th tri-tip, won't there?
You all a very merry Billy Holiday.
No, I don't have anybody to eat it with.
You know, I was going to make an observation. You know, the discussion we've had here in the last maybe half an hour reminds me of, you know, the Will Rogers quote, I'm not, you know...
A member of an organized political party, I'm a Democrat.
Exactly.
I think part of the problem, Rick, is that there's so much to go around.
Yeah, there is.
I mean, you can point to any number of things.
Right.
I mean, some of what Andy says is absolutely God's honest and unvarnished, unfly-blown truth.
Right, right.
I remember when Barack Obama said he would put on his comfortable shoes and walk the picket line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And... I remember all of the legislation that came out of the House of Representatives that was filibustered in the Senate, the most progressive legislation that has ever been passed in 2 years.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that happened because
over and over again, Nancy Pelosi, and mm-hmm. then he just
Harry Reid, and I hope I won't get emails for using sexist terminology. Harry Reid let Mitch McConnell make him his bitch.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there were something like 300 bills that were passed in the House.
256.
That died in the Senate, including, I think, a carbon tax, if I'm not mistaken.
256.
Yeah. Waxman-Markey. Now, it had flaws. It had about 100 gajillion billion dollars for carbon capture and storage in it. But you know what? We wouldn't be sitting here and... You can't. I can say this here because we don't have any fucking trumpanzees or friends of coal or anything. So that means we've got functioning brain cells here. If the dumbasses in the coal industry had not opposed Waxman-Markey, you wouldn't have all of those out of work coal miners you've got today. Because you would have had umpty bajillion dollars going into the carbon capture and storage rat hole. And it's a rat hole.
Yeah,
but bullshit. But that bill that was passed by the House really, really was an attempt to save the life, not kill, but save the life of the coal industry. And so what did my stupid Senator Joe Manchin do? He in November, he ran a general election ad that showed him taking out his manly .30-06, a shooting rifle, and putting the crosshairs on the climate change bill that he'd tacked to a tree and just shooting the guts right out of it. And the rubes ran to the polls to vote for him because of it. Because he was a friend of Cole. He was such a friend of Cole that he went ahead and killed Cole. You know, people want to know why what happened to the coal industry. Letting Matt Waxman Markey die in the Senate did. You know, Mitch McConnell comes from a coal state, and he deliberately slit the throats of his own constituents.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah. Yes, Markey.
One of the funny things that come out of the last episode of Years of Living Dangerously is China is going to a carbon tax system on their polluters.
Yeah, well, you know, they've got an authoritarian economy, and they can do that kind of thing. And you know what it won't do, Sparky? It will not collapse the Chinese economy.
No. It was a very interesting episode, if anybody can watch it. It was, God, I can't think of her name off the alien gal.
Sigourney Weaver?
Sigourney Weaver was going around China.
You know, I hate the fact that you can say the alien gal and I can say Sigourney Weaver. I think that means there's something badly wrong with me.
Yeah, well, I had a brain fart there and I knew you'd catch it. She was doing the China thing I can't think of her last name. She was doing a deal about a Chicago coal or a coal plant in Illinois.
Yeah, there's a clean coal experimental plant that has failed spectacularly in Illinois, and there's another one that's failing spectacularly in Mississippi. Because the problem with that is that it takes, I mean, and any energy system, you know, Snork's our resident engineering expert. Any energy system that requires more energy input than energy you get out is going to fail.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that clean coal outfit was put together by the IBEW, Duncan, and such a spectacular failure.
Well, but the thing is, they don't care. They just want the work.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't, you know, I don't blame them for that. I think it's philosophically ill-advised, but you know, you got a union. The union's job is to get work for the union members,
right? And if there's going to be a plant,
really?
Yeah, if there's going to be a plant, they want the work.
I'm a member of that damn union too, and I just kind of disagree.
But the thing is, with the IBEW, you also at least have on the other side of the coin an effort toward moving membership training toward the clean, sustainable energy economy.
Yeah, every training center now has solar and instruction, and there's the ones in the Midwest have wind turbine towers on at their training centers.
Oh, and let me interrupt, because once again we're running out of time and we're deep in a hole. We've got $245 in fundraising to go this evening. We've had exactly three people jump in to help this evening. And thank you, Keith. And thank you, Dave. And thank you, dadgummit. I had it here. Yeah, thank you, Glenn. Glenn and Keith and David, thank you very kindly. They need some company. And we need to not be in a $400 hole starting more in Monday, if that would be okay, please. Because bills. So there's that. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. If you'd like to become a subscriber, that's a possibility too.
Yeah.
I hate to interrupt to do this, but when we go through an entire program and we've got a deficit and we can't even get back to the regular fundraising level for any given night, we got a problem.
Yeah, and I wish I could help, but my back's killed my overtime, so.
Oh, that sucks
anybody,
a bunch.
Anybody else can kick in, please do.
And you've been, you know, you've done a lot over the years, and all I can say is, and I think anybody with back troubles would probably tell you the same thing. If they start talking surgery, talk to several people don't before you say yes.
Run. Herniated disc is horrible.
Hey, I can speak. Yeah, I'm well, a back surgery survivor. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Actually, I'm not quite sure. It's either bulging or herniated. I'm going to have the neurologist look at the MRI to tell me exactly. So,
Are your toes moving involuntarily? If they are, then you definitely need surgery.
Yes, that has happened.
Oh, well, you need to have surgery then. That happened to my wife.
I saw my lower lumbar.
Yeah, if you don't have surgery in that situation, you get permanent nerve damage and doesn't come back and things are just getting worse.
I've had about since April of 2015 is when my right quadriceps started going numb. Mm-hmm. Now they're numb nonstop and
oh man.
Yeah.
You're not giving me jolting pains down your leg?
Yeah.
Electric shocks and yeah, okay.
That's what I had. Yep. Surgery worked for me.
Yeah.
I had surgery on the day after 9/11.
Wow. Yeah, you're going to need surgery, Jason. I mean, I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the radio, but based on what my ex went through, her symptoms and so forth, you're going to need it if you're going numb in certain areas of your legs. Your toes are lagging back.
It's called a lumbar laminectomy.
Yeah.
Once you have the surgery, you'll feel like Frankenstein for a few days, but it'll start loosening up, and you have to go through physical therapy.
Yeah.
I'm in physical therapy now, trying to just re-strengthen core muscles and hope that it'll heal, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Have you had an MRI, Jason?
Yeah, I've had an MRI.
Well, they can tell you that. And they recommended surgery, right?
No, the neurologist hasn't seen the MRI yet. I gotta wait till the end of next month to see the neurologist. That's how busy they are.
Because I got referred from my doctor
I remember.
Anyway, let's move on to something else. And just my back problems are not these radio show's problems.
Okay, well, I can say very happily that Steve in New York just jumped in to help. We are now down to $235 to go, so that's a good thing. Hopefully, Steve will get some company too. Meanwhile, I've got a note from another member of the fraternity of Steve. So we just crossed under the $200 mark. Thank you, Alma. Thank you so very, very much, Alma. Just knocked it down to $185 to go. Thank you very kindly. 16 minutes, $185. So thank you very kindly indeed. A note coming from another member of the fraternity of Steve. In times of crisis, the subject line says, A Night at the Opera. In times of crisis, it is acceptable to seek a wider latitude, a higher conception of the real source of danger. I am no prophet or seer. I can't say that I've made it my mission to seek, much less to find, truth. But the broad outline, the overall perplexity, I can say with confidence I have seen this coming for half my lifetime. In other words, not awfully surprised. There are methods. There are similarities across disciplines, systems, viewpoints. Take opera. One expects to experience a species of high art when experiencing opera, but one may be awfully surprised at the artistic renderings of, say, Mozart. Whether the experience is better described or labeled as genius or scandalous is often just a matter of pure accident. You cannot escape your place in history, your predicament of personal ignorance. Science offers the better and contemporary case. It is theory that provides the foundation, the motive in whatever it is can be explicated or explained. You must at least comprehend the theory in order to best appreciate the results. But those results, the working details, are sometimes a real surprise, even to those who best comprehend the theory, its best consequences. Prediction is always blindsided by what is eventually discovered. Quarks and supermassive black holes are just too weird, but there you go. With regard to politics, the present moment, the greater or lesser players, I am not blindsided by the results. Goon presidents and reserved suites at the Kremlin, for all we know, are just too weird. My predictions have been based on theory-bearing models for quite some time. It is the unknowns, the details, things you don't know about the players in the present opera. They're going to floor you, kick you in the ass 1,000 times. From now on. Don't you, America, dare try to sell me that load of horseshit about not having possessed a working theory of your very own right from the starts. Regards, Steve, in China. And I think we could probably take a 3-hour front porch on that all by itself. We're in the, you know, we're in the middle of history like we're in the middle of a river. And we're in the, with the infinite monkeys, infinite typewriters, one of them writes Hamlet theory. I guess there's a one in, oh my God, we don't have time to say all the zeros, chance that Trump comes in and we have an American goddamn renaissance. Now, wouldn't that be a funny thing? You know what makes that possibility even exist? The fact that the people who control the levers and the engines of the economy will now begin to cooperate because they've got their guy in there and he's not talking all that commie nonsense about people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. You know, an economy that's running on Milton Friedman's ideas might very well just heat up and run like a steam engine at full pressure. But you have to feed a lot of fuel into the goddamn boiler to get it to run that way.
Well, and going beyond that, a great American new renaissance, if that's not redundant, depends on who you are and where you're standing. From 100 miles up, it's a pretty nice picture. But if you're down on the ground and you're getting steamrolled by the so-called Great American Renaissance, according to you, it's not working for you, then that's a whole different matter.
I think we're more like the ancient Roman Empire, and we're looking at a Commodus coming into the White House.
Oh, you may very well be right. What I'm saying is that the possibility exists. I think there are more possibilities that exist that find us getting worse and not better, because that is the natural evolution of empire. If for anyone with a passing interest in history, go and read the history of the Byzantine Empire. There's a wonderful book called Lost to the West. I can't remember the title, the author. But what you see is this empire trying to cling to life until it finally dies in May of 1453. And yet, out of the
pretty much what happened under Commodus.
Pardon? What'd you say, Jay Cruz?
I said we're looking at Commodus coming into the White House. It's pretty much the same thing that happened there, right?
Well, but the devolution of empire happens in waveforms. It's not a straight slope. It's not a hockey stick.
Well, should we just take it or fight like hell? I mean, what are our options?
Well,
I think you have to fight like hell for your life and for your community.
Absolutely.
I would have to say so, because I think there's a very good chance that we may be looking at a nuclear winter if we don't fight.
That's what scares the hell out of me, and that's what I was alluding to earlier tonight.
I mean, I'm not joking at all. I am very, very concerned.
No, this isn't a joking matter.
Hey, well, Bob.
Yeah.
See if you can get... Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you see that link I sent you on Governor Brown's speech that he made in San Francisco the other day?
Yeah, I did. That was kind of hell's a popping, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought so.
If they shut down the satellites, by God, we'll send up one of our own.
Yeah. And they aren't messing with
and it's not just California either. You've got the attorneys general of both New York and Massachusetts who are vowing to make life a living hell for the Trump administration if they start trying to come through on some of the bigoted, vicious, ignorant promises that were made on the campaign trail. And those are some of the elements of what it means not to collaborate. Using the institutions that do still exist to press back. You know, you create pressure in the streets, but you also create pressure in the halls of government.
You know, if it wasn't for the jerk-off, I don't even want to talk about it, Cubans in South Florida, we could probably separate, too.
Well, can I throw this in real quick, a historical notion?
Yeah, go ahead.
In 1960, when I was beginning the first grade, I went to a private school, a Catholic school, so we were not part of the city bus system. The school basically leased city buses, you know, commercial buses, and for a dime you could get a ride to the school and back again every day. Well, up on the, below the ceiling but above the windows were advertisements. And one of the advertisements that made an impression upon me at that tender age was a red background and a headshot of a very angry, threatening-looking Nikita Khrushchev with his fist raised and big, large white letters on a commie red background, "We will bury you." And I don't know who the sponsor of it was. It was obviously a PSA, probably for Radio Free Europe or Buy War Bonds or something like that. But that impression, lo, those many years ago, or that image, made an impression, and it popped into my head the other day with all this talk of Putin, who was, after all, a KGB general, okay, back during the former Soviet Union. Could it possibly be that the scenario that we're looking at is that the commies are finally soon to be in a position to undermine us from within and not without?
No.
Well, A, they're not commies anymore.
Because Putin isn't anywhere near a goddamn commie.
It's a fascist.
He's a fucking oligarch. He's a fascist oligarch.
I mean, there are still rump remnant commies, if we're going to use the term, in Russia, and they hate his guts.
I'm more of a damn commie than Putin is.
Oh, by orders of magnitude. Orders of magnitude.
I have way huge, magnificent orders of magnitude.
Let me just jump in here. Things are getting better. Thank you very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus. Cletus is a good girl. They took us down to 170, and then along came. Just a minute, got to get all the numbers together. Along came Rob, 160, and in the final analysis, Brother Deacon Asa jumped in, and I'm missing one somewhere, and I apologize, but we are down to $100 to go in the last 6 minutes of the program, but we've knocked it down by a substantial margin, and now we're basically just down to what the leftover was from last night. So thanks everybody, thanks very much. We could actually do this.
Well, failing the notion that Putin is a commie, then perhaps what you're saying is absolutely true. There was never a so-called red menace. We weren't the enemy anyway. We, the people, the little folks, the real enemy all along has been the fascist totalitarian, economic totalitarianism has been the enemy all along.
And
the Red Scare has been nothing more than a smokescreen to focus us and detract us from actually seeing what the real enemy is.
That's a pretty good analysis right there.
Okay, I'll agree with that one. I got it then. So, but then again, we are in the position now of having a U.S. president, okay, and a cabinet with him being infiltrated to whatever extent,
no,
by the head of that former communist country, no, who is now a different type of enemy. Is that pretty close to reality?
No, no. Trump may be a little bit compromised by the Russians, but what he's putting in place, these people, they are 100% pure American fascists. These are the leftovers, the ones that would have been very happy to collaborate with Hitler and Mussolini and all those other motherfuckers back in World War II.
And that's exact. And that's exactly who these people are. Everybody who runs out, look, we've got a history of this. Jay Cruzen, you're absolutely right. You know, I had that article I mentioned earlier in the week where Michael Kinsley in the Washington Post said, you know, Donald Trump is actually a fascist. And he said, you know, we've seen this movie before. And yes, back in the mid to late 30s and all the way up into the 40s, even after the outbreak, the entrance of the U.S. into the Second World War, we had Americans who were actively collaborating and actively participating in the rise of the Reich. Okay. Henry Ford, IBM, and all the way up into the 40s. He was busted in what, 1942, 1943? Prescott Bush Sr. busted under the Trading with the Enemies Act for his activities at Brown Brothers Harriman in supporting Fritz Thyssen, who in turn was known as Hitler's Angel 857, who had 857, damn it, Gerald.
Okay, and I have one thing to throw in before 857 passes by. Do you actually realize that if without global capitalism, the Germans would not have been able to bomb London because a company in England manufactured the frickin' additive to the fuel that the Germans used in their airplanes to reach London?
Wouldn't surprise me in the least, because after all, if you are familiar with the brilliant satire Catch-22, remember when Milo Minderbinder hires the German Air Force to bomb his base on Pianosa because what's good for M&M Enterprises is good for everybody, and everybody has a share. Joseph Heller knew that kind of thing, and it sneaks into his book.
That about sums it up, Bob.
I think it's time to get out of here.
Great book, great movie.
The book especially. But a valiant effort at the movie. I don't know how they even thought they were going to make a movie out of it. So it's time to get out of here. Sparky, is Malloy live? Do we know?
I don't know. I haven't checked. I don't listen to him anymore.
Well, I understand that, but that leads to the question, will the group be continuing post-Malloy?
Well, it'll be good. Continuing right now, post Bob.
Yeah.
Till it's nobody in it.
Okay, well, sounds good. Anybody want to jump in, if you were afraid to be on the air, we will be off air in a matter of moments. So feel free. The room is open and the conversation is fine. Me, I got to get out of here. I got to get on the road, as usual. So thanks, everybody. Thank you very kindly. Thanks, Sparky, for once again moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks to everybody who jumped in. Thanks, Andy, for calling in from California. Thank you, Jay Cruzen. Thanks, Rick. Thank you, Snork, who was too quiet this evening. Thanks, Scott and Punky. Thanks, Steve from Georgia Stan. And again, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Thanks, one and all, for all you do to keep us on the air. We close the program with $100 left to raise to finish out the week. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thank you very much. And a little something to think about on the way out the door. Robert in Australia writes and said, if this was the future we should have had, people with really bad back pain could have moved to the moon and lived under 1/6 G, which would be a lot less painful, one presumes. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a great weekend.